This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuckboy, the number one fuckboy, the number one fuckboy whose windows are currently open, the number one work from home boy, ruining all his apartment buildings, other conference calls. It's me. All you gotta do is trust me, Johnny G. Missing from the High and Mighty Studios is Arthur Gabris. Dude is busy bothering my wife for food. Also joining me in the High and Mighty Studios, they've been here before. I'm happy to have them back. It's the end of 2020. It's been a shit year, so let's end on a high note. And with the inability for black men to jump in Hollywood, it's the Black Men Can't Jump, James, John, and Gerard.
Honestly,
Thank you.
The fact that you do all...
By the way, if you can see, I hit the chair lower button in the middle of the opening, and I was just struck all the way down here.
Yo, first off, like,
watching Gabris do it, and seeing Gabris has, for everyone at home, Gabris has a headband on, and one piece of hair as he was doing it was just bouncing from side to side.
Yeah, I guess
the intensity. As the intensity went up. Oh,
it really never gets
Hell
old.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Number one fuckboy. Number one fuckboy. The fact that you do all the cadences in one fell swoop, I thought that was a recording program that you just hit in.
Wait, you're telling me I don't have to do that every time? Fuck, why did I not record it? Oh, I recorded it 250 times. That's why you're a good producer. Among other things.
I'm trying to save your voice. I'm trying to save your voice.
Very good.
Man. Oh, man. I can't believe I haven't previously thought of that.
This can't be the first time. This can't be the first time you thought of this.
I'm truly embarrassed.
I always thought you used last week's.
I know. Part of the fun for me is I know it makes my guests be like, all right, well, then this show, who cares what I say? This idiot is going off like this. I can't look dumb now. But you're right. I should 100%. I could save myself time. My upstairs neighbors are like, hey, so what do you do for a living?
His window is all open. Hey, yeah, my chest hurt, man. Give me a second. This is ridiculous. This is how we starting this? Okay.
Amazing.
We can wrap it up now, too, if you guys want.
Woo. It is the wild thing about starting this is I feel like people come on our podcast and we're mad energetic. So to be on another podcast and have Gabris energy just give, literally, I'm looking at Braylock the whole time, cover his mouth. James is smiling, and I'm like, oh shit, am I ready? Do I have the level of energy for
this? I gotta bring that Black Man Can't Jump energy for the sake of this podcast. I mean, this is the same way we always are in person. It's screaming.
That is true. Loud as hell.
That's true.
I always am. That's why I felt such kinship towards you guys upon meeting all of them separately and together. I was like, oh yeah, you guys like movies and yelling? We're going to be all
You believe that jokes come from just raising the volume of your voice? That's the execution of comedy.
Say the joke again. Just be louder with it. Say it one more time.
Did you come up doing comedy in crowded indie bars with barely any crowds, so you're used to just projecting over the sound of a woman shaking a cocktail? Well, then,
oh my God.
Podcasting is not for you. I'm realizing I have a microphone. I've been I'm like just seeing the red bar go over and over.
Oh my God. This
people are hitting the volume button. I do for the listeners, because it's been a minute since we've been on. I just want everyone to know that this very calm, rational, charming voice that you're listening to right now is Jonathan Braylock.
Ugh,
I just want to separate myself from the other two. No. Yeah. I just so that
Why are you
they
doing
know.
This?
Oh, yeah. Just in case you're listening to this for the first time, I'm John Gabris, the host of the High and Mighty podcast, and this is my voice. I just kind of want to distance myself from these guys.
Wait. Oh, are we just now just doing intros now? Yeah. Is that are we just going to do intros?
We were already introduced.
We were doing it.
The game was did the thing. Like we had to do something there.
No, no, no. Absolutely. No, I just, no, you don't have to do anything more. You know, I just, you know, we were introduced together and then Drow was talking. I just want everybody to know, you know, when they're like, I really like that. Whose voice is that though? I really like that one. You know that.
No, oh, yeah, no one's calling your own shot of like, pay attention to this voice. You're going to like my hot takes on movies. No, I'm pretty much the funny one here.
Yeah, no one's doing that. Literally, we had to stop down so Braylock could do a goddamn intro of it. So.
I got bad news to tell you how few people are even listening to this thing overall. You know what I mean? Don't worry about people trying to pick favorites. People have already turned this shit off the second I started yelling.
Well, fuck that. He's not the only one. If you listen to this deep-ass black man voice, this is Gerard Milligan.
Wait a minute. Okay.
There are three black men on the... There are three black men.
Hold up. He did his intro, James.
Deep-ass black man voice.
He did his intro. Gabriel did his.
All right.
I'm just saying for everybody at home, this deep-ass... Boys, the mid ass voice right here.
Wait a minute.
And of course, we have Teddy Pendergrass is back on the podcast.
I didn't want this. I didn't want to do this.
Yeah, his voice is James the Third.
Thanks, boyo. It's me, James the Third. I'm also black.
Thank you for that. Is definitely the subtext of everything I say. I'm also black.
Yo, but low key, I made a joke before. I heard James get mad about something, and I'm like, yo, James probably got the deepest voice and is just catfishing all of us. Like,
no, this is real. This is really me. This is how I sound.
James at home sleeping in do-rags. Yeah. Watching Boys in the Hood.
Switching, but not pitch switching. I didn't realize that.
Just all part of the process.
Oh, yeah.
James be like, hey, Cat, where dinner at? Like, oh, shit. Whoa. Who is
hey,
this?
Hey, Cat, where the dinner at?
Hey, where the dinner at, Cat? I
also completely chauvinistic, too.
Hey, Cat, you make my dinner yet? James come down.
It's
writing scripts.
I've
been writing scripts
James.
All day. Nah, but it's dinner time on the East Coast.
Oh, you guys, I love my wife and I'm nice to her, and this is how I. This is my voice.
Oh my God.
This is my real voice. I find that I could do an impression of a black voice. It's me. I'm a black guy. And not get in any trouble.
Is that the black voice? Damn, James. You set us all back now, James.
Nope. There are three black men on this podcast, and this is the sound of one of them.
That's fair.
23andMe, 100% black, okay? That's
all 23.
I could have saved you a couple of bucks on the test if you needed
it. Truly, I forgot if it was 23andMe or Ancestry.com, but my parents both took it, and my dad's was just like, Virginia, Mississippi. I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah, that can't be right.
Come on now. It's like, LA, hey, you black. That's what that's
yeah. You're like, your ancestry stops here for some reason. There's a little bit of a fucking water gap in between.
Yeah. It stopped. What was your mom's, Bray?
You know, Italian and Irish mostly, but there was like a little bit of everything after that.
But wait, I didn't realize that they did state, like they would be like this state area. Or
I didn't know that was a thing.
They also do, they were like, this is the real. And then they were like, and then we think like further back is like, and then it was like some, it was a couple of different countries. It was like the Congo, some West African country.
They was like, you from like, Mississippi. Okay. And then somebody's like, the black spots we know of. Like, we know you from Mississippi. Like, we know.
Yeah. The map is like, you're from one of these two regions. It's a little dot in Mississippi and then like the red continent of Africa. We're not positive. So fucked up.
Wait, which one is the one that be snitching? Doesn't one, like, isn't there one of these ancestry tests that, like, they've used to solve crimes? It's like,
That's how they solved that Golden State killer, the one from the documentary. They, using 23andMe, they found, like, a third cousin of this person's DNA. And we were able to like trace the lineage and one by one start checking off family members like, hey, can we, they have a DNA sample of this cousin or whatever, and eventually tracked it all the way back to the killer.
Could you imagine this dude's at home And his cousin in Florida, he doesn't talk to, took a 23andMe test for like Christmas.
Hoping
and he's
he
like,
was Native American or whatever,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Like, I hope I was an eighth.
2%, that counts.
God. 2%, that means I'm a, this is my spirituality. This is my entire identity going forward. It's like, yikes. So we were going to talk 2020 movies. This is the last episode of 2020. This is coming out on New Year's Eve. So we were either going to talk about this or Entrapment, the only movie I can think of that takes place on New Year's Eve and has Catherine Zeta-Jones' ass going underneath a red laser.
First off, I watched a doc on her.
Sorry, Gerard, to cut you off, but Bray, I remember that trailer is the most, like, I know exactly how old you are, because all I remember is the trailer of her ass going on there. That's the shit that just burns in a young boy's mind.
But do you remember any other part? I have no clue what the plot of that movie was.
I think I've seen it, and I don't remember anything but that.
100%.
Like, I don't know how they tag, how they team up.
Yeah, Sean Connery's in that too, right?
Yeah. First off, she's in a cat suit. He just in like, I think he has on like black army pants, baggy like hoodie. I'm like, wait, this don't, how does this match up?
Not to mention he's 40 years older than her when they're 10.
Oh, God.
I remember it was this doc and they were saying how she, I always thought she was like, because I saw, was it Zorro? And she was like the lead actress. Yeah. It's like, oh shit, like there's a Mexican actress who's like big. She's not, I don't think, she's Mexican at all. Like, I think she's not even...
She just popped that Spanish Zeta in there?
Yeah, oh, wait, let me double check. But I was watching this doc, and I was like, oh, you're not from Mexico?
I think she's Spanish, right?
She's Welsh.
Wow.
Whoa.
She was raised in Swansea.
She's not even
she's
Spanish.
British. That's crazy.
Yo.
Really on the Jones end of the Zeta Jones, I guess.
British.
Yeah.
Yo. So she's not Latina at all?
But I'm wait, sure but she's got to be
was,
half
But
Spanish
neither was Antonio Banderas, right? Like, he... not Antonio Banderas. Why did I say Antonio Banderas?
Zorro was Antonio Banderas.
But, Anthony Hopkins was the...
That's
was,
true. Yeah, Anthony Hopkins
I thought there was, like...
Too. Yeah,
they were talking
he's
about,
British.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, so they were just Anthony Hopkins is in Zorro?
Yes, he was the first Zorro. He trains...
Yeah.
He trains... Banderas. He trains Antonio Banderas.
But is he supposed to be...
No, he's just
so he's just a
Sean
British
Connery
dude.
Plays Spanish in The Highlander too. He plays
what?
An ancient Spanish man.
Yo.
And his voice does not change. He's like, it's the quickening, McLeod. His name is like, he has like a Spanish name.
Oh my gosh. No. Yo, movies are
they didn't
a
care.
Mess.
They didn't care
oh
at all.
His name, you want to know what? Real quick, just off the dome. Not off the dome. I had to look it up. Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez is the name of Sean Connery's character in Highlander.
But he has his regular accent that whole time?
No.
Yeah. And it's because the justification they make is since they're alive for several hundred years, their accents make no sense because they've lived everywhere. Because Patrick Lambert, who's like a Scottish / American, he literally sounds insane. That dude plays...
The whole time.
Yeah.
Wow.
I haven't seen that movie in a very long time.
No, me neither. And now I want to rewatch it.
There's no way that holds up.
Don't worry. It's they're going to remake it.
We watch it for Action Boys. They've made like 5 sequels and like a TNT series. And it's crazy how
I remember
much
the
shit
TNT
there
series.
Is.
Yeah.
The first one is pretty cool. It's got Queen on the soundtrack, so that's pretty tight. Like, that's a pretty fun, epic movie for a soundtrack like that.
How did it get a sequel? I'm looking at it right now. It lost money. like it, the budget was $19 million and it only made 12.9, so it lost money.
That's got to be some early on VHS
winner
or something like that.
Because I think it was like a cult hit.
Yeah, the home video market probably popped off for that, and also like back in the day, those movies used to get popular on TV again too. You know, what I mean? Like that doesn't have the opportunity anymore,
right? I'm pretty sure I saw it on TV.
Yeah,
that's where I first saw it.
With
the amount of movies I just caught on TV with commercials. Yeah, yo, James, so true. The amount of movies I've
with
seen
with commercials,
or when you rewatch them as adults and there's like a titty in it, and you're like, I never saw it. I've seen this movie 20 times, and I guess I only watched it on fucking WPIX,
right.
And now I get to see a quick titty.
WB,
TNT, baby. I saw almost every movie on TNT once we had like a little. What was it, a little fake cable block thing where you could like borrow cable.
Yeah, come on.
Where you could borrow cable.
Come on,
cable.
Baby, borrow cable. Come on.
Come on, baby.
There was something
the Spice
that my
channel, I had all the shit.
Yeah, because it's weird too. Because there was something that my mom's boyfriend at the time, like as a kid, what he was like stealing, and you could get the premium, the channels that were pay per view somehow. Like somehow also got those. That you would have to pay each time you visited it, but it was like, no, it's just...
My boy had it. My boy, he had everything. We could watch fights over there. Like, it was
Yeah,
insane.
It would be like, those pay-per-view channels would be like, all day long, we're playing Men in Black. And it would just be like, you would have to pay $12 or whatever to watch it back in the day. But if you had the illegal box, it would just be like, this channel plays Men in Black, I think, for the next 11 days.
Yes.
And when you go to your friend's house and there's like a decent movie on like an illegal box like that, you're like, we're going to leave this shit on all fucking night.
Or wrestling. I was big into wrestling. And like, yo, all the pay-per-views... I was here for it, man.
It's crazy being a kid trying to get like your parents to greenlight $40 to watch wrestling or UFC or whatever.
I can't believe
my parents
were
like, get the fuck out of here.
Never.
Not even like, we couldn't even get parents to like take our money to order it. They were like, we don't trust you. I'm not giving my credit card number to them. It's like, wait, come on.
Yes.
Right, we each give you $5. Yeah.
What am I calling in? Nah, man. Nah.
Kids don't know about that these days.
They struggle.
Yeah. But 2020 has been a fucking shit year for a lot of reasons, and one of which is included is movies.
Lord have mercy.
For people like us who, you know, some would argue make our living off of new releases.
Some would argue.
Some would argue our revenue comes in from movies coming out, so it'd be nice if they kept coming out. But also on top of that, it kind of like... I think we're all theater goers here, so it's kind of like readjusted our entire.
Ugh.
And it's weird. Like I can go a couple of months without realizing that I'm sad about the lack of new movies. But every once in a while, it comes back and it hits. I mean, and partially is because there's way more to be sad about in the quarantine. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's true. But every once in a while, it's like, oh, thanks. I could at least just be upset about movies, which is a little lower stakes than a quarter million dead Americans.
Yes. So,
fuck, Tenet. Okay, at least it's not everyone else's grandma.
I just got enraged that HBO... that all the Warner movies were coming out on HBO Max. Like, I got enraged.
Bro, that's why when Bray responded with, like, year in review, I had just read that article, and I was like, yes. I was so fucking heated about that. Let's talk.
Is it weird that I'm kind of okay with it?
Bro.
I am, too.
No, listen.
I'm torn. Let's talk.
I miss going to a theater. Like, I 100% miss it. But at the end of the day, the actors have been paid. The crew has been paid. These directors have been paid. Some of them are waiting
on back-end stuff.
Back-end stuff, for sure. But at the end of the day, a lot of them have been paid. And to me, the fans, we are the ones suffering because we don't get to see it. Like, we don't get to see... We didn't get to see Candyman this year. I really wanted to see Candyman.
Oh,
you know?
I know.
And it's like, why not give us the opportunity if you live in a place where you can still go to a theater, go, but in LA, we can't go. So, like, I still want to see shit.
Yeah.
We haven't seen Tenet.
It does feel like I am like pleased that like to take a step like this does make the movies one AM available, and then B, like, it's also helping to save lives in that, like, if a movie theater is open where you are, but they're also still, you know, it's not like the COVID cases are zero anywhere in the United States yet, you know, so like it's helping to limit the amount of people that are going to be going out and stuff like that. But I also feel like a step like that is just one more. There's been so many, but it's just one more like nail in the coffin of like movie theaters existing.
Yeah. So here's what. I'm along the same lines where I'm excited because some of these tentpole releases, or you can simulate a tentpole at home. That's like the thing that I've been doing. It's like just having Wonder Woman coming out on Christmas gives me something like, yes, a movie premiere. Am I going to watch it on Christmas or December 26th? Like, I can't wait. You know, I would much rather see that in a theater with all the fucking full accoutrements and a crowded house. I agree. But I do think this like whole year-long slate thing feels a little short-sighted because will people go to the theater? It just feels like to announce it for all of 2021 is like, we could have this shit under wraps by like July or August, and then you could start having some of your blockbusters come out then and kind of recoup some of the cost. They're going to lose a lot of money. They are, which also... you know, woe is them. Like, I don't care. Like, I care more about like they're billionaires, the studios. They're the ones who built this entire system of monopolies. So they're the ones who walked themselves into the corner here. But there's something that just feels like this is not the first step, but like James was saying, like the fifth or sixth step in a long walk towards the end of movie. I mean, I think we're going to be okay. Like, living in Los Angeles, there'll just always be repertory theaters and like people like Ryan Johnson who'll just donate $100,000 to keep a fucking small theater open or whatever. Yeah. But I feel for other people, like these fucking warehouses that, you know, I think, all right, hold on. One more point of view and then I'll stop rambling. But the, I do think this might change what a movie theater is, and I don't think a movie theater needs to be 20 screens, 200 seats in each, movies playing every 8 minutes. Like, maybe we don't need to build... Movie theaters seem to be built for the premieres of Marvel and Disney and big tentpole movies.
That's what they are now.
Yeah, and that's all they are. So, like, that device, that's where you start to go, like, well, if all concerts turn into Coachella, of course, if concerts are off, there's no more, you know, 20-person concert here. Like, if we're all, if the only aim we have is billion-dollar weekends, then if that system is toast, like, we'll never be able to do that on this method. But if we're just trying to get movies some funding and keep them alive, like... this could be the answer.
Yeah. I mean, I think about it in a couple of different ways because so many people have been saying, like, I mean, they're not just saying this for movie theaters. They're saying this for theater, for, like, you know, live everything, basically, of, like, oh, is this the end of this art form or whatever? Like, there will always be people who are going to want to see movies in the movie theaters. Like, I am one of those people. Like, I'm always going to want to see, you know, a certain amount of movies in theaters. And... like, I think, and the adaption that movie theaters did, like AMC with the A-list pass, or, you know, movie pass that made all these different, like, you know, different, you get subscriptions or whatever, so you can see as many movies as you want. That was a brilliant innovation because, okay, so I know I'm spending a certain amount of money every year to see movies in movie theaters. I can see as many as I want, you know. I'm probably ordering more snacks when I go each time because I think I'm saving, psychologically it feels like I'm saving more money on the movies, you know? So I'm like, oh, I'll always buy a popcorn because I didn't actually spend money when I entered here, you know?
Right. It's sunk cost already. It's already gone. It's like when you go on vacation, you're like not calculating the cost of the flight and the vacation. You're like, whatever, let's just buy another drink, baby.
Right. Exactly. Swindle. But look, the pandemic is going to... Here's the thing. To me, the independent theaters were already suffering way before this. The pandemic is wiping them out because regardless of whether we get back on track in July of next year or September of next year or the beginning of 2022, like, the damage is fully done. Yeah. They were already, like, barely surviving as it was. They already had to show...
They
major.
Were not doing hot before a pandemic hit. Like, it was, they were, theaters were having a hard time before the pandemic hit.
Yeah. Like, famous independent theaters in New York City, you know, closed. Like,
so many.
Of course it was going to happen. You know, I'm sure it's happening other places around, you know, the country and stuff like that. But I also want to see movies. Like, I don't, it's the Tenet thing is so, is a good, I mean, I think this is why they did it. And it was so frustrating as a consumer and we're living in LA, you know, even if you're living in New York, like there was no way to see Tenet unless you drove like 30 miles outside of the city. You know, at some point, and you were risking COVID, you know what I mean? It was like this double whammy of like, even if I felt comfortable doing it, there were no theaters here in the immediate vicinity. So it's like, am I going to really like spend a whole day driving somewhere with the chance of getting COVID just so I could see I mean, I know people did.
But it's also
that thing because like other people knew about it. They knew about Tenet. Like people were talking. I've already heard without reading or looking for it at all. I've already heard a few people be like, Tenet wasn't that good. And I'm like, that sucks that I already know that.
Dude,
even though
I'm feeling
I've never
the same
it.
Way. The fact that I lost enthusiasm for Tenet, I blame on like the people who saw it and weren't that hyped or whatever. And I'm like, no, why? I don't want to know your opinion yet. I usually see shit opening weekend for this reason.
Yes. I mean,
it's hard because I think sometimes I read this. I know everyone's probably heard that. Not heard, but read Christopher Nolan's feelings on HBO right
yeah,
now.
So. Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of other people. So like, I read a Hollywood Reporter article this morning.
I did the sacrifice for nothing.
Yes. Yeah. And but they told him not to. The thing is so hard. Is like they were like, "Yo, wait."
It
like,
failed. It's failed.
It's like wait. It becomes a point where I have a tough time because, like, as a person who likes watching movies, yes, I want to see it in the theaters, but it does start feeling, maybe because I'm broke and I'm not a rich Hollywood person, like, it starts feeling a little selfish to me. It's like, yo, you've been given at least some money. Like, I know everyone isn't getting, I read this article, they have this phrase called, like, the Wonder Woman deal. Apparently, everyone who was a part of that got paid, like, substantially to have that be released on HBO Max. So all these movies aren't getting that, but all of them are getting something and have already been paid initially. So it's like, if you really made this movie to get it out to people who are your fans, people who love you, and health-wise, they physically cannot go into a theater unless they may have a chance of getting sick, but there's an opportunity for the studio to not hold on to it, put it on the shelf, actually release it. It's like, why not let me have the option of either going to a theater or just watching the goddamn... I want to watch The Matrix. Of course I want to see it on the theater, but I want to see The Matrix 4, man. Like, let me watch that shit. Yeah.
I think they can go a little bit, like, something that might make sense for them if they're thinking that. I'm worried that if they're not going to make the money they expected, which they unfortunately expect so much, and it's like threading this needle of a movie needs to be released this day, a movie needs to be released this day, and all this shit. And they built themselves up into like painting themselves into such a corner, and it feels like now it feels like, oh shit, well, let's bet on HBO Max instead. And it's like, let's rip all these Band-Aids off and bet on HBO Max. And it feels like it's too early to go fully there. Because, like, September 2021 will be here before you know it, and why can't Dune come out in theaters then? Like, if they think that's going to be one of their tentpoles, you know what I mean?
I do agree it's weird that they didn't even try to, like... test it out first and see what it would be like.
Right. Do Wonder Woman,
like with at least one movie, and then be like, "All right, like there was no need. It's not like people needed to hear this announcement, you know, right now. Like they were demanding it. I don't know. It's also it is pretty reactionary to like Tenet bombing. But I also what I don't hear enough is from the other side admitting like, "Hey, Tenet bombed in the theaters, and." The people who did see it wound up giving it not great reviews, which means that if the theaters were to open full, you know, or like you have more openings or whatever, there are going to be a lot of people who still aren't going to go see Tenet because they're like, well, I heard it wasn't that great. Yeah. And it lost all its momentum, you know? So like, it's still not, I get it. I don't know. It's a tough decision. It's not as like, as easy as I think people are making it out to be.
Yeah, no, I agree. I wonder because I was wondering if there's some world where it's like HBO Max costs X amount of dollars a month, not as high as it does now. But then when Wonder Woman drops, you can get it for 48 hours for $2, or you can buy it like you can add it to your HBO Max for $2, like the video game premium.
When they're not charging, it's weird. Yeah. It's like they're not doing the Disney thing. It's like it is not an extra fee. It's like if you have HBO Max, you watch it. Like, that's
and
so
then I start wild. To wonder, like, I start to wonder, like, well, then how much money is our data worth? Like, why are they putting everything into HBO Max? Because they're like, then it must be some huge benefit to of them to have. Obviously, it's a benefit of a subscription service to have more subscribers. But like, if they're like our whole slate is gonna be there,
I know.
Then, how important is that to them?
Also, what's crazy. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go. Sorry.
I was just saying it's crazy because, James, what you're right, talking about like getting more subscribers and stuff. And I was reading this article about how, for instance, Disney, no one apparently checks for Disney outside of nostalgia and Mandalorian. But I read this same article that talks about HBO Max, talks about that Mandalorian is so popular that they can trace back that one show is one of the reasons for like this massive increase of like subscriptions just to see that one show. So I think HBO is like, well, shit, we got Matrix. People love Matrix. We got Wonder Woman. People love that. Because they botched the launch. So it's like, okay, We botched the launch. We fired all the people who know studio stuff. All we have now are these like Silicon Valley like tech people, kind of like Netflix. And it's like, let's force people to come to this fucking thing, even though you can't get it if you got damn Roku. So it's like, I got Roku, so I can't even get it. But.
I know.
I was thinking
Roku
the same
too.
Thing. I'm wondering, like, I would love to see the data in 3 months, like how many people signed up for HBO Max since that Warner Slate announcement,
right.
And see if that actually got anyone. And I can't imagine it's that, because you're like, oh, I do want to see these movies. Am I going to lock in at $144 for the next year to, like, I'll wait and sign up for when Matrix 4 drops, the one I do want to see or whatever. Yeah. It just feels, I mean, clearly there are some smarter people than us working there. So I'm hoping, not guaranteed, but you're hoping that they must see, unfortunately, that the future lies in streaming and not in exhibition. But I think part of the reason is their own fault. Like, it's like a self-predicting kind, like they're like, streaming is the future, so we're wiping out our movie slate and it's all going to go to streaming. It's like, well, you sort of just made streaming the future. Like, you're not allowed to say, like, it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. That's the word I was looking for. It's like, they're like, I think streaming is the future, and then by pulling this Band-Aid off, it's like, you sort of solidified the fate of, it's got to be streaming now.
Yeah, like, I was frustrated when, for that same reason, I was frustrated when, it might have been Trolls 2 or whatever, it was some animated movie that came out and, like, and did well in the rent at home,
it was trolls,
and they were just like, this is gonna be, doing this kind of release is gonna be a part of our slate moving forward, and it was just like, but there are so many circumstances that contributed to why it's successful right now in this way is everybody is sitting at home right now, and if you make a decision right now, then you are doing exactly what you just said, Gabriel, of like, you're deciding that, you know, people are going to be streaming from home now.
And
my whole piece is just for a year.
Yeah,
it's supposed to just be for a year. So I'm hoping that's, I'm like, if that's the case, because I do think it'd be, people like us, it will be 8 months to 10 months before we get a vaccination. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like... So, and that's, dude, that's of course thinking about it, like, of, at an early time.
Of course it's going to be just for a year. Like, I think they make so much money with these. First of all, the movie industry has already changed so much so that they pretty much only make movies that are these huge tentpoles anyway. Like, that's their majority of their slate are these movies that they expect to gross, you know, hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars worldwide. And if they don't do that, like, they're going to lose out on so much revenue. The reason that they can't make that next year is because of the pandemic. And the pandemic is happening. If it was just an epidemic happening in the United States, I don't think they would care. But it's happening everywhere in the world. So their numbers are depressed everywhere. Like, and if one country, you know, decides like, hey, COVID's spreading again, we have to clamp down, you know, this vaccine isn't working, like, they're not going to make that much money, and then they're not going to get the subscribers on their, you know, their streaming service or whatever. So they're like trying to figure out how to not lose all of this money.
If I was
like a not such a fan of movies and dying to get back to the theater, I would enjoy like laughing at executives who bet their entire future of their company on like 10 different movies coming out at 10 different specific weekends in the year and betting big on China being one of their number one viewers of these American export of cinema. If I was a meaner person, I would enjoy laughing at these assholes, because it's like, yeah, guess what? If you had a bunch of mid-budget movies, maybe they come out on streamers and work well and aren't huge loss leaders for you. But no, you greenlit exclusively mega fucking things. And you have your slate built out till 2023, and it's all building towards hoping that Avengers sells even more tickets than all the movies, like the Voltron of movie ticket sales. And I want to mock them, but I'm the one who's suffering because I don't even like Marvel movies, and I'm there every night at opening weekend. Yeah. Like, I don't even care about them that much, and I'm there every fucking week. And it's like, I want to say, fuck you guys for betting on, like, this weird...
Right.
Fuck you guys for trying to make billions rather than being okay with making, you know, billions less... you know,
that's true. They're doing like all or nothing. Like I'm watching so much football right now. It feels like every movie is like a Hail Mary pass, and you're just like, why are you always like?
Just get on top. Three analogies. Funny. But you know what I mean?
Just make layups. Just make layups.
I was thinking big swings in my head, and then you're right. Hail Marys is a better analogy.
I've never seen a sport, so
it's the 3-point analytics. They're just chucking up threes like the Houston Rockets,
right?
Okay,
yeah, they're playing
gonna win a championship. They're playing Moneyball, and it's just not. It's yeah, screw them.
Yes. Netflix is a joke, and Ben and Jerry are back working together on something extra special, and that something is Punchline ice cream. Ooh, it is delicious, and it's a combination of two different ice creams, brown butter bourbon and almond, and then it has roasted almonds and chuckles of cherries. Get it? Roasted and chuckles. Ice cream is delicious. I really like the dough core Ben and Jerry's ice creams. I like to sit down with a big old pint to myself, you know, just hanging out, throw on, maybe my wife's there. She's got her own pint. Sometimes we do 1 pint, 2 spoons, but we'll throw on, you know, a Netflix is a joke comedy, post up, I like to throw on a little midnight gospel, eat a little ice cream while I watch. Ooh, it's a wonderful combination. So grab a pint to enjoy with your favorite Netflix comedies anywhere ice cream is sold, or find a new favorite at benjerry.com. That's benjerry.com, BENJERRY.com. Dig into Ben and Jerry's Punchline anywhere ice cream is sold, or find a new favorite at benjerry.com, BENJERRY.com. That's benjerry.com.
Wow. Apparently, as we talk right now, I signed up for like random movie updates, but I just got 2 emails. One fits exactly what we're talking about. It is that at this exact moment, apparently there's circulation happening inside the Directors Guild of America of directors talking about boycotting Brothers.
Oh, my Lord.
Just because of how the rug has been pulled from under them. Also, this is a very big tangent. They're also like is a, almost a soft confirmation of Andrew Garfield in Spider-Man, which bothers me because...
We were talking about this right before we recorded.
Because with their plans, everything so far. They get Toby, if they get Andrew, that's great. They can get Kirsten Dunst back. But if I don't watch that movie, and whatever... Again, I don't know if it's a portal or something. Miles, goddamn portal, I'm going to lose my shit because... Because hear me out, y'all. We all watched Spider-Verse. It was fire. Everyone was like, oh my God, it won Oscars. It's great. Spider-Verse is now a movie without the person that was in the goddamn Spider-Verse. You know what I mean? I bet. Don't tell me who's casted in them. I don't want to know. I want to just show up. But all of a sudden, at the very end, you see some Jordans come through the goddamn portal. And it's Miles whooping ass. I swear to God, if all these white dudes appear in this movie without Miles, I'm going to lose my shit.
I honestly, I never bet on like people making the right decisions in those cases, but it feels like too much of a layup and more specifically of a moneymaker for them to miss out.
No, come on,
Bray.
We
were briefly talking about this.
She won't be the main character. But.
Yeah, exactly. Like
no.
No, God, come no. On, man. You might die first. You know, old horror movie rules.
It opens with Miles swinging out and then just...
kills him immediately. And it's just like the ghost of Stan Lee goes, are you happy? You're like, what? What the fuck? We were talking a little bit about this Spider-Man casting news before we started rolling, and we said, I'm tired, and this is another problem I have with the movie industry. Now that movie press is all marketing, I had my friend Drew McQueenie on the pod earlier this month talking about this. He's like, movie press has become all marketing. And so it's like, we know every single person who's in the Marvel movies before they come out. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like And the fact that I know Doc Ock, that they got Alfred Molina back, that you just said the soft casting of Andrew Garfield.
Yes,
I
whoever
don't want to know about Miles Morales. I just want to see Donald Glover show up or whoever, like someone younger. Probably.
Oh, yeah, he's, that's right.
Well, Donald Glover's already, he's already his uncle. He's already playing that character in the, yeah. So it's like, we know Miles is in, he's out there. We know he's in this world.
Yo, my thing is,
we haven't seen him, you know, they haven't cast him yet, you know, so.
See, yeah, I was like, is there a black kid on Stranger Things? Maybe it's him, you know what I mean?
I would love for Caleb McLaughlin to play that part. I would love, he's not Afro-Latino, so I get it. Like, people, I like named all these people on Twitter, and they were like, none of these people are Afro-Latino. I was like, you're right, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's completely fair.
You gotta cast somebody new. Because my thing is, I think the beauty of when you watch, I mean, even though the actor who voiced Miles, you know, isn't Afro-Latino, I did love him going in and, like, speaking Spanish at one point, talking about his drawings at the next point. Like, to me, it was something so cool about seeing this dude just walk around, like, Brooklyn. And, you know, I, if they put him in, I think they do have a chance to pull off a Black Panther where, like, he appears in the movie. You know, again, he's not the lead, but you establish him. He gets his own movie. We don't have to go through the whole backstory.
Right,
we can
right.
just, like, he's established, and we just live with him.
Yeah, yeah, because, and you know? And even just think about that, because, like, Black Panther and Spider-Man were my favorite parts of Civil War, and they were both, like, you know, smaller parts of that movie. Mm-hmm. And, yes, like, if they did something like that with Miles, I think I would love that. Like,
Civil War sold me on Tom Holland so fucking hard. They, like, gave him such a great
really
fucking intro.
A great job.
Like, I was so, I couldn't believe the deftness in which they pulled that off, because I was immediately like, oh, I had no desire for a Spider-Man movie. I was fine with him being in the Avengers because I was like, great, just I don't have to deal. And then that, I'm like, I'll see a Spider-Man movie. And it was good. And he did it. He pulled it off. Guys, kid's good.
It's true.
I mean, it's I'm the only thing that's one of the, my only thing about Tom Holland's Spider-Man is I feel like Tom Holland is a really good actor. Like, I remember watching that movie Impossible when he was, like, younger in this, you know, the tsunami movie. And I'm like, oh, this kid is great. But every time you watch one of his movies, it makes sense they team him up with someone. You know what I mean? So, like, it's Iron Man in the first one. Mysterio in the second one. Now we got everybody in this one. And it's like, I kind of just want my man to just be Spider-Man.
To have a movie
just,
by himself, yeah.
Just let him do his own thing. Like,
yeah, I mean, he did 11 Iron Mans. Yeah, let him have one, yeah.
But like, you can't do it now. You can't do it with the sequels. You know,
no, you established this partnership thing. Like, you got, because what is it? Is Doctor, also, Gabriel, you're right. I feel like we're talking about this movie. I have no idea the basis, but we know so much about, like,
right. We don't know what the premise of the movie is. Yeah, exactly.
Well, like, I know.
I got a little theory I'm going to throw out here. This is nothing, I'm sure, but also, this comes out on December 31st. People are going to be like, so much information has come out since then. You guys are fucking so behind. But I know Sam Raimi is back directing the Doctor Strange sequel, right? So I wonder if the Doctor Strange, a character who deals in the multiverse, will tee up the idea of the multiverse in the Doctor Strange movie and then see it pay off in Spider-Man, where all the different Spider-Men come back from all over. That's my
Doctor
guess
Strange
is that they're going
to
establish the multiverse, which I think also allows them to fucking not be so continuity-driven. Like, if they have, like, a multiverse, they could be like, and look, Eternals doesn't even take place in the same thing, so you don't have to worry about any
Is that going to be good?
I don't know. I don't know. It'll be a spectacle. Like, Ben Rogers on Action Boys referred to Marvel movies as sort of like a theme park ride in a way where you're like, I'm excited to go on it. I went on it. Don't need to do that again. And arguably it wasn't an artistic experience, but it was Transformers, the All Spark or whatever, you know, so at Universal Studios. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. That was kind of cool. A lot of whizzing noises and stuff like that. And they don't stick with you like that anymore. That's my Marvel complaint I never really want to rewatch any of them.
I mean, I've rewatched some of the old ones. Like I rewatched recently Iron Man, the first one, just because I don't know if you guys watch this thing on Netflix. It's the movie That Made Us?
That Made Us.
That's what it's called. Yeah, Movies That Made Us. And they just released like their holiday one with like Elf and Nightmare Before Christmas. Yeah. And they talk about Jon Favreau a lot. And I'm like, yo, you forget that this dude was like an actor, you know, made Swingers because he couldn't get an acting job. Swingers end up being this big hit, put him and Vince Vaughn on. And he's made Iron Man, which started Marvel Cinematic Universe. He did Lion King. He's
Mandalorian.
Did The Mandalorian. Yeah. And it's like, this dude has done massive
and
things.
He's like crushing
don't
The Mandalorian. Yeah, he's absolutely. He's like crushing it.
He's a great writer.
I highly recommend watching Gallery on Disney, which is like the making of The Mandalorian.
Yes.
It's very enjoyable. Did you guys watch? Did you get to that chapter about the they call them chapters. Did you get to the episode about the volume, the thing that they shoot in? That's LCD walls and ceiling.
Yeah.
And it's all LCD and they can just project whatever background they want. And the background moves with the camera. They have a computer program.
Oh, wow.
So the background moves with the camera. I highly recommend you watch it because it really lets you unlock to be like, these guys are doing some fucking next level shit. This could change the game of like, because Mandalorian does look a little wonky at points, but you are watching a TV show, which is like where you allow it, you know?
Which it's crazy because I feel like it usually looks really good. And then when it does look wonky, you're like, huh? And then you're like, oh, right, this is a television show.
Exactly. You're doing 10 episodes. How are they space battle here? Yeah.
How are they doing all of the stuff that I saw before? Like, the Razor Crest looks incredible. Like, I don't understand why.
Yeah, It is that.
We live in a time now where, like, all the content is so varied where, like, I know we're supposed to be talking about the year-end movie review, but I feel more excited by like the new TV shows I found versus movies because I'm like, what? I know the Oscars, they said they're still going on. The Oscars are going to be in person. Don't know why it needs to be in person.
What are they doing for the Oscars? They're just doing like films. So they're just sending people films that they would have made. Like they're like, here.
Bray, I don't get it.
None of these were actually in theaters and nobody knows about any of them. Watch them at home. Here are some screeners of some movies that we finished during COVID.
Highest grossing film, Bad Boys 3. Let's get it.
Best Picture.
I think it was either that or Birds of Prey was the last movie I saw in the theaters before everything hit. Yeah. I was trying to see one more movie. I forget what movie.
I can't believe that came out this year.
Yeah.
I feel like the only other movie I saw in theaters this year was Sonic, I want to say.
Sonic. I saw Sonic too.
That's the other one. That's the one I was like, I was going to see, but then it kind of hit at the same time. Like, Sonic
also,
is one I didn't make
it
to.
Kind of fun. It was fun.
Sonic was fun.
I did not see it. I believe you guys.
I hated it.
No, it was.
You did. I can't remember. I think we reviewed it. Did we talk about it?
It was dumb. Like, it was a dumb movie.
It can be dumb and fun. To be fair,
it's one of those the rewatch isn't as fun as the. it's like seeing it the first time.
That movie shows to me that I miss, and I think we're gonna get back to it. I miss 1990s. Jim Carrey so much. Like, Jim Carrey in that movie was not a human. Also, at certain points, he was moving his body that I had to Google him after and go, how old is this? He's moving like he's still 30. Yeah. I was like, this is crazy, dude. I'm a big fan. Big fan.
I think I'm just going to run with what you said here, Gerard, about the 90s and be like, I think we need to make a return to, like, there are tons of indie movies, but I think we need, like, those sort of, like, mini... You know, God, I wish Harvey Weinstein was still around. But, you know, like, I think, like, we need, like, some new, like, more A24 level people out there who are doing stuff. A24 has a lock on their style of shit, and they're making quality stuff over there. But I want, like, an A24 for comedy. Or, like, I want people making those million-dollar movies where you're like, oh, shit, yeah, this would be fun. You're like... I feel like everything aims to be like, it's The Rock, Kevin Hart, and these other three mega famous actors doing this premise. The movie cost $100 billion. God, I hope it's good. It made $99 billion. Comedy's dead. It's like, no. You didn't make a comedy. Like, just relax. No. Give me fucking two comic actors in a smaller budget movie that is essentially...
It's so sad.
And because comedy's subjective, you're not trying to make $1 billion every time you make a comedy, but every once in a while, one pierces through that everyone likes, like Booksmart or... like Anchorman or one of these movies that, across the years, but, that makes everybody
laugh. Like, how much did school, and this is a kids movie, but well, I'm not sure what School of Rock was marketed to, but like, how much did that make? Because it became this huge, like, there's a TV show, there's a Broadway.
Did well.
Yeah, like, it did
it
so well.
It couldn't have been that expensive either, is what you're saying. That's like what I'm saying. It's like, that's a great level of movie.
It's like $15 to $30 million films.
Yeah.
Made 130.
Fuck.
Made 130 mil.
Watching old movies a lot for Action Boys and for other podcasts and stuff make you really realize, like, they used to, like, stack up, like, dumb movies. Like, that new Sorkin movie. So we can talk about some movies that came out in 2020 before we get out of here. But The Trial of the Chicago 7 or whatever.
The Trial of 7,
I didn't see it. I didn't see it yet.
I'm sure someone who knows more about history will tell me why it was an incorrect retelling. And I'm positive that Aaron Sorkin probably told a slightly whitewashed version of it, I'm guessing. Like, it's completely obvious. But the fact that it was a legal drama / kind of historical kind of thing with a great ensemble cast.
Great.
Harkened me back to the 90s of Grisham novels and stuff, where it's like, they used to just be like, this movie's called Runaway Jury. Dustin Hoffman, Gene Hackman, John Cusack, Con Air's got, like, you know, like, these movies they used to just fill with actors, and it was about the star power and the fun idea and the cool director.
So many of Denzel Washington's movies are movies that, if Denzel Washington wasn't in them, they wouldn't be good.
Yes.
Like, they're so generic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're
so generic. He's not getting built into this bulletproof movie like Disney and all these movie production studios are doing now, where it's like, it's Dune and it's got everyone. And it's $1 million and it's this and it's this. So it's got to do well. It's like, hold on. What about this guy wants a kidney for his kid, so he takes a fucking hospital waiting room hostage? It's like, this movie is going to be bad and you're going to hate the guy. It's like, what if we put Denzel in it? It's like, give me John Key. I'm watching this show.
I have a theory about comedy, though. I have a theory that, like, comedy went...
Poor comedy. Because,
again, no, hear me out.
I will.
Because comedy... I think you need to see comedy on the big screen. I really do. I think comedy...
You need to see it in a club. You need to see it live.
Yes, I need to laugh.
I felt this way about Lovebirds this year. Like, that came out this year, right?
Yeah, it was this year,
On Netflix. And I was watching it, like, laughing so hard, but I was like, man, if I was in a... Imagine how it would have been if I was just in a packed theater full of, like, drunk people eating popcorn.
100%.
Like would have been so much
comedy
better.
Comedy and horror play so much better.
I'm telling you right now, there's no way The Hangover would have been as good as it was if people did not see that in a theater with everybody else.
Yeah.
100%.
Wedding Crashers too. There's so many movies where it's like, because you are in the theater, the communal experience, like a movie like Borat. I didn't even watch the new. Did you guys watch the new?
Yeah,
I did.
Borat sequel. Yeah,
I liked it. It didn't hit as hard as the first one. I can't tell. That one is a special combination because the first time you saw the movie, it was really eye opening to that kind of premise of a movie too.
Right.
And then it was in a crowded theater, and not since Jackass did I have Jackass 3D. Might be my best, like, in theater experience in my life, where I was like, if you watch this at home, you would love it and you would, like, cringe a lot, but watching it in a crowd where you can be like, oh, you know, and slapping your friends next to you and shit, like, that's what's missing from all these. And you're right, John. Like, I couldn't imagine sitting in the theater and sitting at home and watching Hangover, like, by yourself or with your partner.
No.
And you're not going to be fucking losing it.
Also, I think people lost. I personally think, like, a lot of these movies, like, a lot of our class, like, you talk about Superbad, you talk about... like 40-Year-Old Virgin, all of these movies are very heartfelt. You know what I mean? They weren't the mashup of action comedy. You know what I mean? It's like, to me, what went down was 21 Jump Street came out and was so massive. It was like, it became a thing of like, oh my God, it's so high concept. It was so good that everyone wanted to copy it. And then people started just throwing money at these comedies. Where, like, again, comedies are like, $10 million, $12 million, you know, not a $50 million thing, right. And it can't recoup sometimes.
And remember, it was like they, it's what they attribute the success to. They attributed the success to the fact that 21 Jump Street was like a known thing. Like, oh, well, people know this is a IP. You know, like,
IP. The people who laughed at it the hardest probably have never seen one episode of 21 Jump Street.
Yeah, or knew anything about it.
The people who enjoyed that movie the most. It's Jonah Hill. It's Channing Tatum. It's Lord and Miller. It's like you got all the fucking smarties attached to it and funny people. It had nothing to do with 21 Jump Street.
No, I remember. Was it Johnny Depp appears at the end? Also, sorry, the end part of this there is also, I think as much as Netflix helps get comedies out, I do think that a lot of these comedies that you would see like Always Be My Maybe in a theater for a little bit, you know? It may not be in that alone, but it would be in a theater. Now it's just like, oh, this is now a Netflix comedy. And that's no diss to a Netflix comedy, but it's like, it's almost saying like comedy doesn't work in theaters. And it's like before COVID, people already gave up on it. You know what I mean?
Right.
It
was people don't want to see comedy in theaters, but that's not true. Like they just haven't been given
good.
It's
comedies.
Because they if we're talking about theories about comedy, here's my theory about comedy.
Yes.
You have comedic stars once they get about 3 to 4 movies before the mass populace is like, I've seen it. And I'm kind of done with it. Now, you always get returns, but there's going to be diminishing returns. You know what I mean?
You see it with all the greats you're referencing
all
right
of
now.
Them.
Like,
and you got to go be serious after
Farley,
that.
Farley, you know.
Melissa McCarthy's happened to her. Vince Vaughn. Like, yeah.
It happens every time. Like, some people have a little bit longer, a little longer of a stretch. Some people have a little bit shorter. But it's like, you know, after a certain amount of things, like people are like, I get what that person does and I want something fresh. And yet we hit this period of time where they stopped allowing new comic stars to be created. And they were like, we got to make another movie with Will Ferrell. We got to make another movie with Kevin Hart. Right. We got to make another movie with Melissa McCarthy. And it's like, but they've been shining for so, like, we need a new person.
You need to make a movie with Betsy Sodaro. You need to make a movie with Carl Tart. You need to make a movie with, like, bet on some of these motherfuckers who everyone thinks is funny and who are objectively capable of doing comedy and put them in, like, Lapkus in The Wrong Missy. She fucking shines in a David Spade, in a movie that you would be like, I don't know if I'm going to tune into this because it's a Netflix David Spade Happy Madison comedy, which... For some people, is a turn off. For me, I've watched every single Happy Madison movie that comes out.
And I watched Hubie Halloween, baby.
Hubie Halloween.
I was here.
But The Wrong Missy puts Lapkus.
I saw the mystery one.
Sorry. Oh, yeah, Murder Mystery is great too. That one's fun. Good.
But Gabriel, to what you and Braylock are saying is what you need is you need a comedy director like who comes from the trenches to make it. Like I always think about 40-Year-Old Virgin in particular, because 40-Year-Old Virgin has a random bunch of random people in it. Kevin Hart has that random bit, was like, this your man?
Yeah.
Clap, you know what I'm saying? Clap both of y'all. Yeah. Then you look at like Jonah Hill, who if it was been any other director, would have been cut out of 40-Year-Old Virgin, because his part does nothing to the plot. He just comes in,
the eBay,
I want to buy these. Yes.
Yeah.
With the shoes. I want to buy them. I can give you the money. I can do it right now. Like he has this funny ass bit. But like a comedic director is going to be like, oh yeah, I'm going to just put this person in this movie. But we don't have that.
I totally forgot that was the introduction to him.
That's like, yeah, that was like he shows first, up yeah. with the heels.
He was also in, I think it was called, was it called Undeclared? Like there
and
was
he
a
had
college
movie. Scream. Not Undeclared. Yeah. That was the TV show
Sorry.
That Seth Rogen was, no. Fuck. Unaccepted or Accepted or something like that. It's something like that, right?
No, that's what it is.
Oh,
it's
that
called
movie,
Accepted.
Yes, yes.
Where they
made
their
fake college.
Yes.
Made
the
fake
college. The famous high-pitched scream, right?
He's was like, that after this? Was that before this?
I'm not sure.
Would you like to try
that
my
was after
40-Year-Old
Virgin.
Yes, that's him. Yeah, that's him. Also, Jonah Hill had reared that. I want so bad. He gets to do whatever kind of comedy and then an Oscar movie. And he can do both in the same year. Like, it's beautiful, man. It's beautiful.
Yeah, like, Justin Long, like, do we even have people like this anymore? Like, Justin Long, who, like, was never, like, the most famous, you know, actor. But he got to star in several comedic films, you know what I mean?
And was never the thing that was wrong with the movie.
Nope.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Good, like, just solid.
It was never his fault if he was in a bad movie. He was always just value added, which is like, that's career longevity. There's a good career to be jealous of. Something both of you guys just said that, and this is my theory and my complaint about comedy is, and this is just a microcosm. I'll give you one example as a microcosm of what's wrong overall. The Rock and Kevin Hart do a movie together and it's pretty, and it's early on, and it's very funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seth Rogen and Zac Efron do a movie together, and it's very funny. A studio takes The Rock and Zac Efron to make the next movie, to make Baywatch, and then it sucks. And people are like, that's weird that it sucked. It's like, yeah, because it didn't have Seth Rogen and Kevin Hart in it, two people who millions of people think are funny. There's an overlap where a lot of people think both of them are funny, but each of them has a fucking galaxy of comedy fans, and they were like, but The Rock and Zac Efron are buff and movie stars, and they're going to be good.
And they're funny, yeah. And it's like, and they're funny. For who they are, their type of acting.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
Yeah, this may be sacrilege, but they're not comedians. I liked them in that, but yes, you are identifying exactly the wrong thing, which is that exactly the thing that people get wrong all the time, which is like they don't trust comedians to do comedy.
Right.
Yes.
And the same thing with even TV, even comedy TV. It's always like the three good-looking people and someone we all think is very funny. And it's like, just put four funny people. Also,
I'm even thinking...
Funny people are good-looking. Like, yes, there's good-looking funny people.
Also, like, Kate McKinnon, Kate McKinnon, you know, was a huge star on SNL, and people were like, all right, she's going to get a shot at, you know, leading movies. And the movies they put her in were, like, action comedies, like a remake of Ghostbusters. They're the one with
Spy Who Dumped Me.
And you're like, what? Like, why can't she just do a comp? Like, I feel like she wasn't able to be like, let me make a comedy.
Yeah, maybe a lesbian rom com. Yeah. Fucking something like.
But I don't think these people make movies. I don't think we do it. My theory is after 22 Jump Street came out and that also was a hit, people are like, this is how comedies make money. It's got to be The Spy Who Dumped Me makes no sense.
Jumanji didn't help our case. Jumanji kind of fucking solidified that theory too.
So much money.
It's like a property starring The Rock, and it's like, it's got to be, it's
also,
funny. You know, it's like, no.
I saw Jumanji and I was like, I was ready to hate it. I was like, this is going to be dumb as hell. I really liked Jumanji.
Loved it.
It was good.
I came to hate it, and it maybe is like Jack Black's best performance in the last 10 years.
He's so good.
He crushed it.
There's a dude that goes by Bray's theory of earlier of like comes in, is fucking killer in like four movies, and then they put him in two a year for another 10 years, and you start to be like, enough with this guy. Then he disappears for a couple of years, and then he comes back as like the fourth lead in Jumanji, and you're like, fuck, this dude is good.
He's always been good,
but we put him in too many movies.
Yeah, we got tired of him.
Yeah,
I'm tired of The Rock. I loved The Rock, and I can't stand seeing him in so many
movies. Listen, if The Rock shows up, I said this to a friend. I don't know why I yelled this at you, James. I've just been yelling this at people. But if The Rock shows up and Black Adam ball headed, I don't know why that's gonna throw me off. Cause it just feels like sometimes The Rock will make a movie. And look, I love The Rock, but he just will become The Rock and not change for the character at all. Like if I have to see The Rock in another button-up shirt,
of course.
That could be like he's on a safari, but not. I'm like, no, man, you're supposed to. I don't change his appearance.
I'm sorry, The Rock, but if you want to be this guy, you got to lose 75 pounds of muscle to play him. Yeah. Like people used to do back in the day. But The Rock in Hobbs and Shaw, like that, like upset me. Like as a big fan, Fast and the Furious head, Hobbs and Shaw upset me because I was like, oh, these are two of the more talented actors from those movies. Maybe pulling them aside and giving them their own chance to flex. But no, The Rock insisted on being The Rock in that movie, in which The Rock and so Hobbs and Shaw are both the badass and the funny one. And Shaw is a sister, is his sister, who's Vanessa Kirby, is 40 years younger than him or whatever, and is interested in The Rock, the most sexless human being alive. Like, they're sitting next to each other and she's like falling for him. I'm like, why? He's been nothing but an asshole. He's a giant murderous freak. Why are you attracted to him? He has no sex appeal. The dude is objectively handsome. His body is insane, but he doesn't sell sexual. Imagine him in a rom-com where you're like rooting for him to get the girl. You'd be afraid for the girl.
This is my thing about The Rock. All right, because it's hard because I grew up watching him on Wrestling with the Eyebrow. So like, I've seen, again, if you remember him, you've seen him go from being like a smaller guy to me, he didn't get massive, like physically massive, until Fast Five. This motherfucker showed up in that movie.
Can we be fair and say he wasn't a smaller guy? He was still
smaller than he is.
And it's just that he became a freak of nature.
Well, yeah, because in the wrestling world,
he's bigger after wrestling than when he was a wrestler. Kind of John Cena, insane. Too.
So the two of them, there was a match before The Rock, like, you know, officially like went on his way. It was between him and John Cena. John Cena at the time was still hip hop John Cena, but he was huge, right? And The Rock was like big, but Rock wasn't that strong. When you see the two of these motherfuckers side by side right now, it's like literal tanks.
Yeah.
When you watch Fast Five, there is no way, no way in hell Vin Diesel is ever, he won that fight. How?
Bro, I'm obsessed with that dynamic because, you know, I heard that they showed up to the table read for Fast Five, and that after that, Vin Diesel did a cycle of steroids because he saw what The Rock was looking like, and then also did a men's health interview where he literally says, well, the thing about Dominic Toretto is he's a guy who drinks Corona and works on cars all day. He wouldn't be muscular and ripped. And I was like, he was already doing the defensive campaign to be like, yo, The Rock is... So in Fast Six, there's the moment where they go into The Rock's office and he's drinking a protein shake and he's oiled up and he's like, I just worked out. And it's the first time that something like that happens in a movie where it's like, this dude would probably have just worked out in almost every scene in a movie he's in. And it's the first time we've ever heard it. It's crazy that The Rock is ever in a movie and anyone has any lines besides, Jesus fucking Christ, man, what the fuck are you doing here? Holy shit, you're fucking enormous. You're a CIA agent? That makes no sense. You stand out so much.
He pulls out, I think at Hobbs and Shaw, or maybe one of the Fast Furious, when he's in jail, he literally takes out the chair in the prison and like just starts curling it.
Yeah, the movie that makes the most sense for him was Pain and Gain.
Right. Pain and Gain, Hercules, like these movies that make sense. Like Arnold played Conan the Barbarian and the Terminator, and those were his big career. It's like, yeah, he's a giant muscular freak. He like
and then
later,
Kindergarten Cop.
He changed his body though. Arnold changed, like when Arnold started doing more of these like I'm a regular person movies, he lost a lot of that physique. He was still jacked, but like Kindergarten Cop, he's buff, but he's not fucking Conan, you know?
I remember him talking about how he was like very nervous to be Terminator again because he was like, I have to go back into the gym and I have to, because he was nervous that they were going to put, there was going to be like split screens of like this is his body in the first movie and this is his body now.
Man. I mean, that's a guy whose career started as being obsessed with his own physique. So like I can get that. But yeah, I remember reading an interview with him when he was doing Red Heat. He like shrunk down to be like, well, if I'm going to play a cop, I shouldn't be this big. Like, and that's just cool. Nowadays, and this is what drives me crazy too. Now we're just into some real personal gamers issues, but superheroes can be fat. Not all of them are based on their physical abilities. Like Star-Lord could have been old Chris Pratt.
But he looks a little old Chris Pratt nowadays. They keep joking about it in the movies. Like he's in shape.
They
but
keep joking about it and it's rude.
He's in shape.
It's kind of like how on Happy Endings they used to call Pally fat. Like,
yes!
And I'd be like, fuck you. He's my most, literally my most attractive friend. And you sit there calling him like fat and dumpy. And I'm like sitting at home watching that going like, well then what am I according to Hollywood?
Also, shout out to Happy Endings. I watched their reunion special. That show is fire. I'm sorry. I know people keep talking about Save Happy Endings, but they had a reunion special because during COVID, everybody wants to have like the let's do an extra scene, let's do a read through of the script, like
for charity and shit. And like and Josh Gad was doing a bunch of that with different movies and stuff.
Like, was it Scott Pilgrim versus the World did theirs, and they got a lot of people back. You forget that like Brie Larson's in that for like a hot second as just like Envy, the ex girlfriend, like. In and out, you know what I mean? That movie has so many celebrities in it who are now famous. Aubrey Plaza, one of the Chris's, you know what I'm saying? One of the Culkins. It's like, it's so many people in that guy. Was it
one of the Culkins?
Hey, man.
One of the Culkins, one of the Chris's.
Yeah.
I'm an entertainment professional. I know who all these people are.
You know, some of the SNL folk is crazy.
Guys, Black Men Can't Jump tell my listeners a little bit about your, first of all, thank you for coming on the pod. I'm glad we got to get some of our fucking anger out about the current movie climate, but I'm hopeful. We have good movies that are due to come out. I will be watching Wonder Woman on yep. HBO Max on Christmas Day, and I kind of am excited that that's there, because also, while we're just being too real, this is my first Christmas without my family.
Same.
Like, I'm just me and my wife in our apartment.
Same.
So it's like that crazy ass shit where you're like, well, at least I have this to look forward to for a movie head, like having something like that to look forward to. It's how I like broke the year out anyway. Like, people would just be like, oh, what's up, Gabriel? So I'm like, hyped for Interstellar. And people were like, what?
Right.
Don't you have friends or anything? Like, nope. So I'll be looking forward to catching these movies on HBO Max. But I'm really hopeful for 2021 and the return to, and maybe cinema has to become more of a niche thing, like going to a comedy club, but I'm hoping that people do the right thing and it becomes that. And, you know, they take care of the customers and entice us all to come back. And us meaning the people like us who are going to go no matter what they offer. And maybe they can figure out some business ways to bring some more people in.
Right.
But thank you so much again. Tell people a little bit about your, you know, we're HeadGum Brothers here. Tell everyone a little bit about your podcast in case they don't know for some reason at this point.
Yeah. I mean, we're not on HeadGum anymore.
I didn't know who was going to do it. I don't know who was
well, that's fair. Yeah. We were HeadGum Brothers. We that's fine.
We love those guys still, man. I love Jake and Emirio.
Once all, a HeadGum.
All the classic, the classic South by Southwest parties and events. I miss those, man. Goddamn.
No, we are a film review podcast, and we review films of leading black actors, and we talk about them in the context of race and diversity in Hollywood. And then, like, you know, I'm really funny. Jarrell yells a lot, and James, like, does his weird voice.
Sorry. Which one's James? I need to hear.
It's
that's
me.
James.
Okay. Hi, it's Mrs. Yeah, James.
Wait.
Why did you? Why was that intro? I'm the funny one.
Did he just say I'm the funny one?
Oh, sorry. I mean, Bray, they listen to this episode, so they know you're not the funny one.
There you go, Gabriel. Wow. I don't even know what to say after that review. Hey, man, just listen to us. We talk about movies, too. Sometimes the episodes get real, real deep, and sometimes it's just silly for no reason. That's how I feel like we do.
Yeah, sometimes we argue
I would say 80% of the time.
Yeah, I would say the episodes I've listened to involve arguing.
But sometimes we're all on board, like, trashing a movie like Green Book, or we're all on board.
Wait,
on
Green Book.
You know.
I liked Green Book.
Hashtag... Do you stop it?
All right.
I'm not going to say it ran away from the mic for this episode.
I'm going to say
that it ran away from the mic.
I like Green Book.
What's wrong with Green Book?
The Farrelly brothers finally making some interesting.
Can you imagine? Mm-hmm. I feel like every time we talk about people now in life, one of us has met them, and I pray when we meet the Farrelly brothers, I am not the person that meets them. Because if they're like, hey, man, how you doing? I'm scared my gut is going to go say, Green Book sucks.
Yeah, it's hard, too, because I actually feel like it should be okay for us as black people to say Green Book wasn't good to Peter Farrelly. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like we should be able to say that.
Yes.
You are able to say that, but then you have to kind of stand by when he never hires you for a movie.
Right, yeah.
Like, that's the only rule. And I'm not going to lie, I would love to say to his face that I didn't like Green Book, but if I'm meeting him, it ain't coming up. I'm talking about how much I loved fucking Outside Providence or whatever.
Yeah.
Listen, I don't need to say it to his face because I also don't want people coming up to me and being like, I did not like Astronomy Club. Yeah, I don't need any of
that. Sincerely, every time.
Opening yourself up for the same criticism. Maybe I want to keep that door closed.
People will tweet like, Astronomy Club was so good. Why did they cancel it? I mean, I didn't like every sketch. It's like, right, what? Like, don't, and tag me in it. It's like, why are you, don't tag me in I didn't like everything.
Yeah, it's rude to tag a person in it.
I've had friends who are outside of, like, who aren't entertainment, aren't in the comedy world, go up and, like, will question certain sketches. Be like, hey, man, I saw that sketch you was in. That shit was weak, cuz. Like, with a straight face.
Don't tell me.
Like, I've been around my boys.
That's
like, around my boys. Yeah, man, we so proud to see what you're doing. But that one thing, so weak. And what was you thinking? I was like, damn, bro. Like, your eye was twitching. I'm like, gosh.
Yeah, my friends are always like, yeah, I saw that thing you did. You were fine. What was that chick's name? She was so fucking hot. Or like, oh, yeah, dude, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's always, and I'm like, shut up, man. Like, talk to me. I'm happy. Like,
wait, did you like me? I have to say this one thing where when Astronomy Club first came out on Netflix, like we were on Twitter too much and looking at what people were saying.
Ooh, yeah,
and there was really early on, there was this one person who was like, I didn't like Astronomy Club. I didn't laugh once. And Gerard replied to them and said, come on, you laughed a little. And they were like, yeah, I laughed a little. And he was like, there you go. And I was like, oh, Steph. And then there was a sketch that I did or something that it was posted. And it was like very similar where somebody was like, this wasn't funny. And I was like, come on. I literally was like, I'm just going to take
the same text.
Every word's the same. And I was like,
it's the Astronomy Club bot you guys designed.
I was like, come on. It's a little funny. And then the person said, no, it wasn't. Also, you're weird for replying to me. I didn't even at you. And I was like, oh, damn. They're like, you're weird. You're weird and sad for even talking to me. I was like, god damn it.
All right, throwing my phone in the ocean now. This guy is correct.
Also, they're right.
That person questioned your whole. They questioned your whole life being at that point.
Why are you trying to be cute? And they were like, "You're sad," and I was like, "I am sad."
See, to be fair, the thing is, you're right. I'm sad.
See, Bray, you didn't look at the profile picture. I feel like the person I looked at had a human face and they kind of had a smirk. I'm like, okay, you could be nice. Your person probably just had like an animal that was like
a
bear growling.
Eagle or some shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
We should talk about that. If listeners haven't watched Astronomy Club on Netflix, I know it's not coming back and it's sad, but that shit was legit very funny. And I find sketch shows
in it.
I did a bit in it, which, and I'm appreciative of that, of you guys having me on. That was a blast. But also, I need to compliment you. I think I've said this in an email or in person a few times, but on the pod, I just want to say in front of witnesses, a lot of sketch shows don't nail the wraparounds. And I find that you guys, the wraparounds were as enjoyable as sketches, which is like a very fucking hard thing to pull off, which kind of makes Astronomy Club wall-to-wall funny. And then with a sketch, like you're saying, like with a sketch show, you're not supposed to like everything. Like you're right. That's a part of sketches. Yeah. Like you're taking swings and you're like, I hope everyone just laughs 68% of the time and it's a passing grade. But when you're fucking interstitials and you're the wraparounds of the sketches, the device of the reality show stuff is hitting like that, you're got an extra 20% of laughs coming out of your fucking episode. So in addition to a high hit rate of sketches and, you know, fucking funny ass talent all around, obviously, the wraparounds really made it like a fully realized show and in an enjoyable way. Truly happy to have friends do a show that I am completely not lying when I compliment.
It is refreshing
to stand by my opinion like this for once.
Thank you. That feels good. No lies here.
Yeah. Well, and the sketch that you were in that I think James and Tane wrote. Your part was truly hilarious. And that sketch was one of my favorite sketches easily.
I accidentally was in a D&D sketch. Like, I'm not even in the D&D part. And for me, that was like such an extra thing to work with you guys. And also it gets to be like nerdy shit. And then I get to play the role Gerard's been watching me play for 20 years, which is white guy who's friends with black people who's comfortable being racist on camera for jokes.
Well, I want to say what's so funny about that. There's certain parts, I think, like when you get to know people in the comedy world where like, I get it now where you're like, oh, you see this Kevin Hart movie or Adam Sandler movie and it's only the same people. Because when that part came up and we were in LA, it's like, oh, get that nigga Gabrus. You know what I'm saying? It's like, that's what I like. Like, I feel like when our generation really just starts getting in the doors, like we can all just be like, all right, just put this person in this thing. All right, my man got it. And then other people will hate us because we're not giving them parts. That's what
I feel like previous generations only like helped people that were like, above them for some reason. I feel like not everyone is like holding the door open behind them. They're only like getting in the room, closing the door and working with them. Whereas I feel like our generation and younger are people who are like, oh, just putting on as many of their friends and like, and why wouldn't you want to do that? Those are the people that you enjoy working with. Yeah. It's fucking crazy.
We gotta eat.
We gotta eat. Everyone's gotta eat. Everyone eats at the gamers table.
We gotta eat. Hell yeah, we gotta eat.
Oh man, this is dope.
Check out Astronomy Club. Check out Black Men Can't Jump wherever you get podcasts. These guys and their pod will all be tagged on the tweets and Instagrams when I post this shit. So follow them all there. They got and here's the crazy shit. We've done plugs now for 5 minutes, and I think we've touched on like a third of the shit you guys have going on, both together and individually. So check them out. Follow them wherever. I'm at Gabrus on all social media. Check out my podcast, Action Boys, at actionboys.biz. It's a paid Patreon podcast. We talk about action movies for longer than the run times of their movies. It's barely enjoyable for me, and I host it. Maybe you'll find some enjoyment in it. Doubtful, but we have some free time. If you search Action Boys on just the podcast app, we have some free released episodes that you can check out there and see if it's for you. And then the Gino Lombardo Show, as always, is on Stitcher Premium Season 2, just wrapped up. And again, thank you to the Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood, James, Gerard, and John, and bye, shitheads!
That was a HeadGum Podcast.
In a part of the world where there are no rules.
Holy shit.
Holy shit, guys. Holy I'm so pumped.
I definitely have not watched this since I rented it on VHS in 92.
Strangers united by the threat of death.
We got all the fucking major players. Seagal.
Vladimir Putin is a good man.
Arnold.
Here, come. Give it to me.
I need you to cream pie me now.
Stallone.
People are loving this movie.
It's got a lot of heart.
You're mentally irregular.
Now. Somewhere, somehow,
body blow,
someone's gonna pay.
I would fucking love for my wife to like see me rip a guy's throat out.
But they didn't count on one thing.
This movie's fucking insane.
It's how you know it's a good movie. You have to do almost all the work yourself to figure it out.
Oh, there's a fantasy component. Yeah. There's some sword fighting.
There's some lightning.
Bam, 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 bam.
There's a new game in town.
You wake up after a few years, and then you don't even know who you are anymore.
We're going to be making Terminators.
We're going to make a really great deal with the Xenomorphs.
What? I don't hate them, but I've been in a room with them.
Yes, I understand.
This is now the 20th ending of the movie.
I am Dar.
I'm your dad.
Action Boys. Boys will be boys.
Subscribe here for bonus content and more free stuff from behind the paywall. To get new episodes, become a patron at actionboys.biz.
Do it! Do it!
Come on! Do it now!